Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Pod of Rock, eurem Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Wir drehen den Verstärker für euch auf 11 und zwar jede Woche. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit einer neuen Episode Pod of Rock und eurem Host Josef Lex.
I'm very pleased to have the genius guitarist Michael Emmert on the show today. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Oh, hey, man. Thank you. I'm great. Thank you for that great introduction.
Michael, you have an album coming up with Arch Enemy called Blood Dynasty. Can you tell us a little bit about what is going to?
Well, I mean, a lot of the story is already told, I guess, because we've already released, I think, 4 or 5 singles. So, you know, half the album's already out there, but the actual full thing is coming out on March 28th, which we're super excited about. And you know, I mean, it's the 12th Arch Enemy studio album, so of course, you know, it sounds like Arch Enemy, but it's the next chapter in our story. You know, it's the I think, I don't know if it's a logical or not logical follow-up to Deceivers, our previous album. I don't know. I mean, it's difficult for ourselves to have this kind of perspective, you know, on what's about the music that we make. I think, you know, for me personally, I just write and record, and I don't really think too much about what I'm doing, to be honest. It's more like a feeling, you know, you're just going with your instincts and your inspiration. Then that's why it's fun actually to read some reviews and or to read what fans are saying about music that we put out, because it's like, then I get the other side, you know, I get the other, how it's actually received.
There is a lot of, I believe, critical subtext within a lot of the lyrics of the album. Are there any real life happenings that have inspired the lyrics for the album, or maybe also the sound of the album?
Well, I think, you know, you can't help but, you know, when you're an artist, you're kind of like, you have to have your antennas out, you know, if you're reading a lot, or if you're following the world news, world events, I think it's, you know, you can't help but as a human being to take all that in, I think, and then somehow it comes out in the lyrics and music that we make, you know. But I don't know, I mean, there's a lot of the lyrics go all over the place, and there's quite various topics on this album actually. So I think it's, I'm not really one to explain lyrics. I think, you know, I think that takes away a little bit from the experience of the listener. I'm not into, like, you know, explaining in detail about things like that. But I think there are definitely a lot of interesting things to read and listen to on this album.
Are there... Did you have any opportunity to implement some new experiments within the production process of the new album? Or is the Arch Enemy music production process already settled in stone?
I know what you mean. I mean, you know, of course we have our way of doing things. Especially, I'm making most of the music together with our drummer, Daniel, and he's also good with recording side of things, you know, programming drums and rearranging things. He also plays guitar, so it's easy to put music together with him. So we do that. We have a kind of a way of doing that that works for us, that's very effective and that we enjoy. But then when it comes to recording the actual real albums, when we go into a big studio, that's kind of a different level, you know. We change producers quite a lot. So we've had, like, on the new album, we did it in Sweden with a guy called Jens Bogren, And he had a brand new studio, beautiful facility in Sweden, and where we also lived there, actually. So it was a residential studio. And we had a great time there. That was a little bit different. His way of doing things was a little bit different to the previous album, which we did in Denmark with another producer. So, you know, all these, that's one way, because we've made so many albums and written so many songs. I think when we go to different studios and work with different producers, it's cool because, it, you know, it kind of like forces us to update our sound a little bit. You know what I mean? You get like a some different input. And that's really, I think, helpful in keeping the forward momentum, you know, as far as developing the band's sound.
In an earlier interview, I believe, with Guitar, you said that there's always guys coming in, hey, I soldered a new cabinet or I built a new guitar pedal. And sometimes you experiment with those things. Have you ever brought something you've built yourself into the studio to record something with?
Oh, no, I'm terrible. I'm not really a gear. Well, I like gear, but I like using it. But for me, I'm not really passionate about, soldering or building things, you know. I'm not very good at that, basically. I think it's all in the head and the heart and hands, you know. It's more of the playing and the writing that I enjoy. I'm even terrible at changing strings on a guitar.
GM, which is funny because you're the only artist I ever had on the show that has a signature guitar string set.
Right, with Rotosound. Yeah, I mean, they're great strings. I it's just been spoiled over these last years. Many years, you know, I've had my guitar tech does everything for me. And, you know, I know what I like and I know, but, you know, it's more like I use my ears, you know. It's like I want something to feel and sound in a specific way. And then I work with people to help me get there. But it's great to have amazing tools, you know, like I have my signature guitars with Dean and Rotosound with my strings, of course, et cetera. So, you know, those things are amazing. I kind of, nothing that I expected, of course, to happen in my life or career. But they're really nice things to have. And I have ideas about, you know, what I want, but then I rely on other people to make it happen. I'm not the one in the workshop, you know, actually building stuff.
There's another very interesting detail regarding your signature guitars, because I've seen the guitars hanging in the stores, and the neck there is lacquered through. But the ones you use always have a stripped neck. What's up with that? Why do you remove the hard fork of the guitar builders at Dean?
I know, I do. And I take all my guitars. That's the first thing I do is we take the paint off. I just like that unfinished, like wood feel of a neck. Yeah. For me, that just feels a lot better. I don't sweat a lot. I don't have really sweaty hands when I play, but you know, I do sweat a little bit, and I feel like when I don't like this feeling of kind of like when you want to get from real low down on the neck up to real high to start a solo, or you climbing up the neck and you feel like you get stuck a little bit, you know, on the lacquer on the paint. So that's why I do that. I just like the feel of it. But yeah, I know it looks terrible. And I asked Dean Guitars, why can't we sell them like this without the paint on the back of the neck? Then it'll be closer to what I use. But then they say that actually most people don't like that look, or they prefer to have the painted necks. So there you go.
I'm an old man. I'm into Stratocaster guitars, and I also love the non-lacquer version of the necks much more. So I can get totally on board with that. Dean Guitars, they have a very broad range of instruments, and you specifically use the Tyrant model, which is a flying V body form. What draws you to that kind of instrument? Because I know the Flying V's are getting more popular, especially within metal, with the very pointy ESP ones and so on and so forth. But what's the magic that that the Flying V body shape enchants you with?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the Tyrant V that we do with Dean is my own model, and that's something that it's a sort of a variation of the classic Flying V, right? But it's a little bit different. But yeah, basically, I always liked the look of the Flying V. I thought it looked really exciting and a lot of personality. And I just sort of, you know, because the first guitars that I saw, electric guitars, I think were like Les Pauls and Bratz, you know, those kind of guitars, you know. When I started playing guitar, there weren't even really any of these like super strats or anything like that around, really. Well, at least they were very not popularized at that point. So, you know, what I would see was like Les Pauls, Bratz, or like the hollow body, you know, those kind of guitars. And when I saw the Flying V, I was like, what's... I didn't understand. Like, I think Paul Stanley was probably using the first one that I saw. So a black one with a mirror pickguard, I think, in the 70s. And then, yeah, I mean, of course, and then I always liked the white ones, you know, like Michael Schenker used in UFO, or, you know, with later, yeah, the black and white one. But when also, you know, I was really into Metallica when they came out, and Hetfield had the white Flying V as well. I always thought that was like, it just looked exciting, and like you just knew that this band was going to rock extra hard. Something like that.
I got some more, a little bit more weird questions.
All right, here we go.
Yes. Not regarding the guitars this time, but we're jumping back to the album. What track on the album contains the oldest written riff for the album?
Right, yeah. I think, there's two songs. There's one called Paper Tiger, which we've already released as a single. That one was kind of written for the Deceivers album, but we never finished it. So it just remained like at a demo stage as an instrumental track. We just couldn't find the arrangement of the song that we were happy with. You know, there was just something missing. And then a couple of years later, listened to that demo and then found, I thought, oh, you know, all of a sudden I had a part that fit perfectly, and it just completed the song. And then we could, I sent it over to Elisa and she wrote lyrics for it. So that worked out very well. That's more of a, that one's kind of old, you know, in that way. But I mean, there's nothing super, super old. But there are some riffs that go back, you know, maybe 5 years or something like that. But I think that's quite normal. You know, like most bands, I think we have a big, you know, there's a big Dropbox folder of like half-written songs and just instrumental parts, you know, that sometimes we finish songs as well. And I think it'd be cool to use this song on a new album, you know, but then we actually get to the next album a couple of years later. You have even more new stuff, and I usually don't go back that much to the older stuff, unused stuff, if you know what I mean. But yeah, that one, also a song called Don't Look Down, has some older older riffs, yeah, which is fun. I mean, it's nice, it's satisfying when you finally get to use a riff that, I mean, I might love a riff, you know, but then you've never found a home for it. And you think, you keep playing it at sound checks, and when you practice, you know, when you pick up a guitar and you think, I still haven't used that riff. It's so fun to play. It sounds great. But then when you finally can slot it into a song and put it in there and it fits great, then that's a very satisfying feeling.
How big is that Dropbox folder you are talking about right now? How many gigabytes?
It's terabytes of metal mania. No, it's a lot of riffs, it's a lot of music, you know. And now I've had a bunch of time off, you know, we played our last shows in December, So last year. So now, I wake up every morning and I play guitar and drink coffee and play guitar and drink coffee, play guitar. And, I'm always coming up with riffs and melodies and song ideas. So now there's just even more. So I don't know if I'll ever have time to complete all these song ideas. Hopefully.
There is a track on the track list of the album, which I've read the title of already, because this is probably a cover. It's Vivre Libre. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I wouldn't know. I don't speak French, but sounds good. That sounded great. Sounded better than what I said.
Thank you so much. What enticed you to grab that song and make a cover of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, in order to really understand that, I think, I have to confess that I'm one of these sad record collectors. And I collect, CDs, but also vinyls. I have thousands of vinyl records. And I prefer, I really like to collect this underground metal and also some hardcore punk stuff from the 80s, So it's like a lot of stuff that most people have never heard of, never will hear about. Stuff that lives deep, deep, deep in the underground and in nerdy record collections. And I'm one of them. So, that's something that I do on tour as well. I meet up with other collectors and I go to record stores, I meet dealers and stuff like that and trading. And, it's kind of, it sounds weird, right? But it's a hobby and it's something that I've been doing pretty much all my life. So that's, so to this song is just a song. Sometimes I think I'll play some of this obscure music on the tour bus, right? For the guys late at night, we're having a couple of drinks and then I'll say, hey, I'm going to play some stuff that you probably never heard. And, I sneak in a couple of, obscure tracks amidst all the other, normal, stuff that we listen to. And I played this song for the guys one night and they really liked it. And I think Charlie, our bass player, said, actually we could cover this song because, one, it's a great song, but also it's sung in French. It's a French metal band from the 80s called Blasphème. And because Elisa speaks French, so it could work, And then, we tried it. But, I always thought this was going to be like a bonus track on a special edition or something like that, right? But this turned out so cool that we decided to include it on the main track list of the album, which is a first for us to do that, a cover on an album in this way. And, I don't know what enticed us to do it, really. I mean, it was one of those things. When we finished it, it sounded much better than we actually expected it to. And I think it was just so, we just thought it could bring a interesting dynamic to the album. And it's certainly something to, it became a question, everybody's asking me about this song. So I guess it's good.
You being a record collector is also a pretty good segue. To my next question, what is your most prized possession within your record collection? Not the most expensive one, but the one where you think, yes, I'm the guy that owns this damn thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of expensive ones, but those are sometimes, those are not the ones, if there was one album, for example, I'd probably go the first album I bought with my own money. I still have that. And I still have that album, and it's, of course, I had some other records before that, but they were given to me. My parents would buy them for me in the shop, when I was there. But the first one that I actually got on the bus with money I'd saved and bought my own, with my own money, so to speak, was the Sex Pistols Nevermind the Bollocks album, and I still have that. I got that when I was like 11 years old or something like that. So I was very early into the more, beginning to get into extreme stuff in a way. So that'll be the one, I think. It's a Swedish press, Swedish pressing. Swedish editions from 19, which I bought, I guess, in 1980 or something like that. So Sex Pistols was already long gone, but I was just getting into it. So,
since you're also deep into punk rock music, is there a punk band where you would like to switch places for an album or two to play with that punk band?
Sure, yeah. I mean, when I got into, like, from Sex Pistols, I went straight into, in the early 80s, there was already, like, bands like GBH, Exploited, Discharge, and all these kind of bands, right? There was much, much less melodic and more, like, intense, you know, faster, harder, more extreme. So I was really into that. And, one of the big albums for me was the Hear Nothing, See Nothing, Say Nothing by Discharge, that from 1982, that full length album was just took my head off, you know, as a 13-year-old kid. It blew me away, and I play it today. It still sounds amazing. And that's kind of a blueprint for that whole genre, I think, of extreme hard punk. So yeah, that would be the one I'd like to be, but then the guitar playing is perfect on that album. So I think if I was on it, I'd probably ruin it. So I don't know, maybe one song I could play on or something like that. That'd be cool.
Jumping back to your new album, Blood Dynasty, again, is there a song on the album that that pushed you out of your musical comfort zone?
For all of us, I mean, we're pretty, you know, broad. We have pretty broad tastes and capabilities as musicians. Even though Arch Enemy is always kind of like, we focus for, it's built around this kind of heavy, you know, and intense metal stuff that we do, which is pretty heavy. But, you know, within, you know, if you look at each member, we've all experimented and played different genres. You know, Charlie's out there with Night Flight Orchestra. I did a band called Spiritual Beggars. So we made like 9 albums, which was more like bluesy hard rock stuff, heavy stuff, hard rock. And then, Daniel's an extremely great drummer. So I think there's nothing really, I mean, we don't play any jazz or anything like that. Or, you know, there are, I think, but there are like, you know, like moments like when we covered Viva Libra on this album, where there's, you know, softer, playing more chilled out like that, you know, more relaxed is, of course, a different flavor for us, but it's still something that we're fairly comfortable with, actually, as musicians. I'm trying to think, sometimes, you know, like sometimes the extreme stuff is hard, you know, like the first single we put out, Dream Stealer, that's a pretty fast song, and it's very intense. The riffs just keep coming, you know, there's a lot of, it's a really pretty, you know, full on track. And then when when I recorded it, I was sitting down the whole time. I was writing it and writing those riffs and then recording in the studio. I was just sitting down, being very relaxed, playing it. But then we actually started playing it live. And then, you know, of course you're standing up, right? And you know, you got all that, you know, it's just a whole different thing. So that was pretty interesting. So note to self, I need to rehearse more standing up before, because I was a bit shocked. It's kind of different, you know, because the angle is different of the arm and everything. And I was like trying to nail all these riffs and it was a bit challenging, but you know, it's always like at the fresh shows, you know, when you have a new song, especially one that's a little bit more, technical, or how you say, a bit more complicated to play, a bit fast. It can be a bit challenging at the beginning, but then, you know, you do it a few times and it becomes second nature, and then you can play, you know, Nemesis or whatever with your eyes closed and just enjoying it.
I got one last gear question. Is there any tool that you can use in the studio but does not make sense on the live stage that you would love to bring to the live stage?
Sure. I mean, you know, I like all, I have a little box of pedals and stuff like that I like use, like, but then my library looks quite different than my studio rig. So nowadays. So yeah, there's like a chorus pedal, an old vintage Boss Dimension C pedal that I use a lot for guitar overdubs and for some melody lines and things like that, that I really love, that really I think is a big part of the Arch Enemy sound. But in the live rig, my front of house engineer hates it, so he's I'm not allowed to use it for phasing issues. So I don't know what it is, but he really doesn't like it. So I try to sneak it in sometimes, but he doesn't like it. So, and you know, when you play live, it's about what, you know, I have to really consider the big picture of what sounds great out in the, for the audience in the front of house. But yeah, there are certain things like that. And then there are, you know, I'll play a variety of guitars and stuff like that, you know, in the studio as well. But when I play live, I don't really, I like to keep it as simple as possible, I guess. So, yeah. I don't think I'm missing anything, really. I think I'm pretty satisfied with what I, you know, we've got a great setup for the live stuff as well.
Oh, you do. I've seen numerous of your live shows, and they always deliver. They always
okay,
deliver.
Great. And the guitar sound okay?
Yes, yes. I think it was Summer Breeze 2022, 2023, something like that.
22, I guess, yeah.
22, where I busted one of my eardrums out. So everything was absolutely perfect over the course of the whole festival. If somebody gets me to destroy my ear also.
Ouch. Was it? Did he get it fixed or somehow? Or?
Yeah, it was actually relatively easy. They were able to temporarily fix it right at the show, like at the medical tents. And 2 weeks later, my hearing was perfect again, thankfully.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, when you're obviously a musician yourself, or you know, it's just the hearing is very scary to, you know, to yeah. lose that. It would be, yeah, it's not good.
Mozart did all he did without hearing. Maybe I'll be the next one who can do that for some reason. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I'm done with all my questions. It's
all right.
Been beautiful. Thank you for being here, and take care. And I wish you the most of success anyone could have with the new album, Blood Dynasty.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, we're excited to release the album now, and then of course we're going out on tour. Go to the States next month, start over there. And then in the fall, we have a big tour in Europe, including a lot of dates in Germany. So we're very much looking forward to all of this.
So then I will see you all out there listening to this podcast at the Arch Enemy shows in Germany. We will hit each other up there.
Great. And yeah. don't forget earplugs this time, okay?
I won't. I never ever again forget your plugs.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Thank you, man.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Das war Pod of Rock, euer Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Und für Musik auf den Augen, werft doch einen akustisch formulierten Blick auf emp.de. Mit dem Code PODOFROCK erhaltet ihr satte Rabatte auf eure EMP-Bestellung und unterstützt so unseren Podcast.